let's talk about risk, and let's really talk about some humble pie for me, because in today's podcast, we talk about redefining risk as the possibility of success and not just the possibility of failure. We talk about how failure is inevitable and should be embraced as a learning opportunity. And I got to eat some humble pie because I got to take pages of notes on this podcast and learn from one of the greatest, most successful, grounded, heart-centered, living by example men that has more numbers and more revenue and more businesses under his belt than I can even count. And when we were done with the show, I dove deeper and deeper and deeper. And this episode is not only an episode filled with golden boulders, as our dear friends Luis and Louise call them, on risk about staying in your power, staying congruent, staying consistent, how to have a team around you, how to be supported, how to make sure you can win. And even one of like, how do you run 88 companies that do a combined number of big numbers of billions every year with a smile and ease on your face? And it's loaded with all of those nuggets. On top of the fact that if you watch and listen to how the incredible guest today operates and thinks and engages and talks about it, it is a masterclass and someone that I would love to emulate. And it's someone I look up to massively to be able to hit that level, achieve that level, and really become the man or the person to have businesses operating at that level. And so this episode was humbling on so many levels. And I have three pages of notes personally sitting next to me right here from when I recorded it, and it's page after page after page. And if you can't see this because you're listening to it, it's loaded. And so this episode is one for the ages. And our dear guest, if you're listening to this, thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate you from the bottom of my heart. And thank you for sharing your wisdom. Thank you for sharing your guidance. And thank you for literally making it tangible, heart-centered, and giving away all of the best in the episode. And so without further ado, let's get into the show with Mike Rubin and let's go master all of these things and work towards that goal. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Mind at George Show. And today, to say I'm underqualified for today's guest wouldn't be a true statement. I think it would be looking at the lens of qualification. But after the first 15 minutes of us talking, I have my notebook next to me and I was like, all right, our incredible guest today is going to just take us to church, but really, I couldn't be more excited, more aligned. We've rescheduled this a few times. I just got back from the event. We've been talking about relationships and success and all these things, and I feel like today is going to be the perfect get-go. And so to even try to do this guest justice, like I'll just drop a couple of names, right? Stanford, MIT, Harvard. You're like, what? I'm like, yep, just teaches there. Minus the fact that he founded his own venture capital firm and in science and tech and entrepreneurship and believes in relationships and serving people. And no one ever goes through the front door, but I don't want to name him the backdoor master. So the success of every other door in life and how to keep walking through them, and husband and father and family oriented and so many magical things. And so, Mike, I am just honored and excited to welcome you to the show. So thanks for being here.
Well, George, thanks for having me. It's such a kind, gracious introduction, and just such a big fan of yours and the podcast and all the amazing things that you stand for. So it's just an honor to be here with you today.
Yeah, man. And I gotta do this real quick because you took me to church right before we started. And I was like, wait, I literally already have a half a page of notes on my notebook up here from talking to Mike. And I was like, I should probably hit record at some point. But one of the things that you had mentioned to me was risk. And I love your take on risk, like your view on risk. And so I would love it if you can just kind of take me to church and unpack that for us to kick off.
Yeah, no, absolutely, George. You know, the conventional notion of risk is, what if I try something and it doesn't work out, right? That's generally how most people think about risk. But I tend to think about it a little differently, which is, what if it does work out and I don't give myself the opportunity to actually succeed? And to me, that's risky.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, so like I loved when you – sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but can you say that one more time? Like just the part where you're like – because that's the part that hit me the most. It was like, I've thought about risk so much in my life, right? I'm like, oh, I'm risk averse. I can do it. But I never thought about the notch shot and how much implication that has. And it like literally tickled my soul when you said it.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and again, to reinforce it, most people would think about risk as, what if I try something and it doesn't work out, right? That's risk in the conventional sense. But I actually think the much greater risk in life is not giving yourself the opportunity to figure out whether you can or cannot achieve the things that matter to you. That's a much riskier way to live your life. And, you know, I've been fortunate to do some pretty cool things in my life, but let me tell you, I've yet to meet anyone, myself included, who hasn't failed at something generally repeatedly. And so that's an inevitability. You don't need to worry about failing. You will fail, sometimes publicly, sometimes privately, like over and over again. And even if you're amongst the best in the world at what you do, you'll still fail repeatedly at it, right? And so you could sort of remove and cross off that worry from, you know, your list of worries. And, you know, that really gives people the latitude to just think about risk differently. You know, and we're all still here, which means that somehow, some way, we managed to work our way through it, right? Like, you've had spectacular fails in the past, but you're listening to this program, so, you know, you've clearly found a way through it.
Yeah, I had somebody show up to the event, and it was like the morning of day three, and they said something very profound and so simple, and they looked everybody dead in the eyes. They're like, listen, you've survived 100% of the days that got you here. And I was like, yep, that tickles, like 100%, because I can think of 1,000 moments where I was like, it's all over. I'm not going to make it anymore. And then to end your eloquent fortune cookie to my soul, you're like, it's not that I went through the front door and that, you know, success was through the front door. You're like, I've just done this long enough and made enough mistakes that like, I just know what not to do. Like failures, lessons, and then just changing the view down to like, oh, I've done that, learn that lesson, oh, done that, learn that lesson, oh, done that, learn that. And you're like, how can I not succeed now? And I was like, I love that view too.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Sometimes I feel like I've exhausted the number of ways to do something wrong. And so all that's left is, I guess, the way that works. But, you know, in life, there's plan A, which is great if that works out. For me, often that's not the case. And so then you're off to plan B and plan C and plan D. And then if plan D seems it works, then you're off to different tactics. And, you know, ultimately you sort of figure it out. And so even at what point you sort of determine something as a quote unquote failure is hard to say. And then what happens if 5 years down the road, something good happens of it? Then you sort of have to revise your entire story of, well, maybe if all that would have, you know, wouldn't have precipitated the way it did, then I wouldn't be where I am. And I like where I am, you know? And so, you know, it's all a story. So you might as well tell yourself a good one.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. Well, I actually have a question about this now for you, because like, as I think through even like the rough intro that I gave everybody, which I got to, you know, read your bio, I've been stalking you online. And I was like, one bio. And I was like, I could do like 17 podcasts with Mike just based on his bio alone. But like, as somebody, like, I think you said, you know, I don't even know the number, but you've started over like 100 businesses. I think in your fund, you guys have a giant fund, a ton of businesses. You have like, I forgot what you called them. They're not tenured, but academic spots where you like teach at Stanford and MIT and Harvard. And then you have your family, which is the most important. And then you're actively investing, but you're also in science and you stand for your humanity. And I'm like, I look at my day sometimes and I was like, I think if that stacked up on me, I might be risk averse just from pressure, right? And my friend Alex Sharfin says this all the time. And I love this because I'm sitting in front of somebody who I get to learn from as well. But he says, you don't have the business you want because you haven't become the person to run it yet. Right. And I feel like 100% of the answer to that statement is the emotional availability to be in that under any level of constraint, and then think methodically without the emotion to mitigate that risk or to make those decisions. Right. But for somebody with you, like, I feel like if I looked at your calendar, I might have like a panic attack, but that's a Schrodinger's cat theory, right? There's also, it could be 1 hour a day. It could be anything, but like, with all of that, how do you find focus, right? Because on my side, I'm like, God, Mike's over here. And he's like, yeah, I got this. I invest in people. I know relationships here. I take the side door. I do this. And I was like, you make this look effortlessly and you talk about it so effortlessly. And we were joking about this before, but like, what does that look like for you? Like, how do you mitigate priority in the lens of that risk and navigate even with all those balls in the air? Like, what's that like for you?
Yeah. You know, George, it really comes down to the privilege that I have of working with exceptional people. Great people make everything so much easier and enable others to do so much more than they could ever do alone. I mean, that's really the answer. It's just all the amazing people around me that I get to work with and collaborate with and enable me to be the person that I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and with that, I have that too. Ashley, my CEO, who coordinates all of this and just spending 4 days. I'm like, without you, I don't think I exist in the world. Like, you're my life mom, my nanny. Sometimes you feed me, you know what to have to catch me in a net. But I also know that relationships are like massively important for you. And we were talking before about kind of the buckets of relationships, but I'd be curious too, like when you think about this team and these incredible people around you, from my seat, it seems really, really easy to know why, but you also are a master at this and you help a lot of businesses this as well, right? Like, I feel like to lead this, like relationships are number one for you, right? But like, how do you even go about fostering or cultivating that relationship with those team members or creating that culture or having those pieces?
Yeah. You know, and I sort of break it up into two buckets, if you will, George. The first bucket is what I call the critical few. And to me, it's who are the critical few people, both in your life personally as well as professionally, that enable you to be your best self. And this is sort of a really interesting sort of paradigm shift that we've seen in society. And it's not a wrong or right. It's just more of an awareness thing, right? Where, you know, there's a tremendous, people are tremendously compelled to have a very large number of followers and a large number of likes and a large number of views. And I certainly understand the utility behind that, and certain business models require that. But there's another way to be considered, which is having very few likes, but having those likes be from people who are enormously critical in your life, right? So for me, if the only likes, quote unquote, that I ever have are from my wife and my three kids and my anchor clients and my mentors and my critical business partners, you know, then I could accomplish 80%, if not 90% of what I want to achieve in life. And so it's these few critical relationships that are so enabling. And for me, the way I cultivate these relationships over long periods of time is I just really focus on how I can be useful to other people. It's not about what I can derive from them. It's how can I be useful? How can I be impactful? Because I trust if I work with people who I'm aligned with, who are compelling, over the long run, it'll all work out in terms of whatever it is that I may or may not even think about deriving from it. But focusing on being useful and impactful is just a great way to build robust relationships. And, you know, everything I have that I go back to, you know, really started with one of those kinds of relationships.
Yeah. Well, as you were speaking, I'm getting tickled over here too, because about earlier in risk, and you said something before we hit record, you're like, the only people who ever like my stuff is like my wife and my kids, and like, I'm doing okay. And even in the lens of your buckets, and I love your buckets, right? I feel like I operate in that. And all too often I get stuck in the be of use bucket and giving all my critical use time. And that's one of those areas of just like adjusting as I go for priority. But also as you were speaking, you're like, yeah, if the only people who like my stuff is like those key business partners and those people in my life, I was also thinking about how much weight we give to the like or non-like from the least critical people in our life. And we make business decisions or adjustments off that instead of staying the course.
100%. You know, and life is a lot about focus and finding the things that work for you and finding the people who support you. And in some ways, the conversation that we had both about risk as well as about relationships sort of intertwine, because mm-hmm. when you have people who are with you for the long term and you put disproportionate weight on those relationships that you know that are robust, you know, then you could take all sorts of risks and go for things and know that it'll be okay because the people who critically matter to you are with you for the long run. So that, you know, to me has just been the biggest difference in my life. Like none of us, you know, some people post their fails and I think that's great. But, you know, you look at my bio, we didn't talk about what percentage of the time, right? Like a client, you know, ended up onboarding or, you know, we just sort of gloss over all that other stuff, right? You know, and
yep.
And that's unfortunate because a lot of people just sort of think that, you know, people who are quote unquote successful are just people who always seem to, you know, be on the mark. And it's just far from the truth.
Yeah. Oh God. And it reminds me of something, and I don't talk about this a lot, but it tickled my body because I was in the Marines for 13 years. Right. And I was like, how did we work together so well when we like hated the mission? We would fist fight in between it. Right. But there was this moment where like when it was ever needed, like we knew they were there, like no matter what happened, right. Good, bad, ugly. Like I didn't have to turn around. I didn't have to look, but it makes you feel invincible. And I feel like that's the critical few is having the relationships like that where you get to be yourself and they get to be all in, but they get to know those parts, those quote unquote failures or the lessons that aren't posted online. But when you have that feeling, it kind of makes me feel like a superhero with no kryptonite because I'm like, I have this net of people that love me because I'm not my results. I'm not my bank account, right? No one's going to judge me at the end of my life based on what number I hit, right? And so it just reminded me of that so much. And then I laugh over here because like in reading your bio, right? I know I've been on the other side of this for so long. You're like, oh yeah, helped and launched 100 successful businesses. I'm like, well, let's talk about the 1,177 that didn't make it past the filter or got too deep into the filter or like, wait, how'd you get into my house? Where is this going again? And I think people forget about that. And I love hearing your perspective because the thing that I also want to call out, and I noticed this, is also how quickly you make decisions and speak about the things that you've achieved or not achieved to stay in that mitigation, right? It's decision mode versus like emotional mode. And I can hear it so well because like there's a part where you spoke and I'm like, I could go pause that and give an entire 1 hour keynote about that one thing that you just shared. But you also focus so much on like what it feels like is the critical details as well. Right. So it even feels like in the lens of decision making, when I hear you speak, you're like decisions go into the bucket of like there's a critical few decisions and then there's be of use to these when I get to them. But like these ones require my priority.
Yeah, 100%. You can take on as many things as you want in life as long as you know what your priority is, because, you know, if you don't get to number 12 on the list, well, it's okay that you had 12 things. The problem is you have 12 things and then you convolute your number one and your number 12. And, you know, you don't really audit how you're spending your time or your focus or your energy. You know, that's where the challenges, you know, come in. So it's just knowing what your priorities are, you know, starting with your values. What are your core values? A lot of people don't know these things. They're important, right? They drive mm-hmm. everything. Then what are the core roles you want to serve in life? Like what, and in what order, you know, mm-hmm. and it doesn't mean that if role one is, you know, being a spouse that you don't ever do role four, you just have an awareness of what your critical roles are and how you generally think about them in terms of importance. So you can, you know, make the right decisions for you. You know, and then similarly goals. And not that these things don't evolve, but having some awareness of what's important to you, what you want to focus on, and in what order is just so critical.
Yeah, I love that. And I just had a random question pop on my intuition when you said that, because I feel like I struggled for so long because I didn't know who I was. And so I was trying to find my identity in all the work that I was in, right? So I end up in business partnerships or in things that are there. And I had a mentor years ago look me dead in the eye one day, and he's like, you're not what you do. You are what you tolerate. And I was like, oh, oh. And he's like, of course that's happening. He's like, what do you believe in? Like, what matters to you? Like, does family time matter to you? Does integrity matter to you? Does asynchronous communication matter to you? And I was like, oh, I have a part in this game too. I forget, like, I'm a player on the field. I get to make my own rules. And that's been a big, big, big part, because even me, like, I'll share a shadow for everybody right now. Like, I was just at my event 5 days and my phone was off pretty much the whole time, minus family emergencies. And I celebrate my presence muscle. Like, I was like 98.6% present. And then when the vasoconstriction releases, I'm like, where did all this stuff come from? And then I'm on the other side of like that come from. And then I'm sending messages. I'm like, oh my God, like, forgive me. It's taken me 5 days. I love you. And they're like, bro, we didn't care. Like, you can get back to us whenever. And boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, I send those messages so quickly because I'm also like over here, like, oh, Mike's mad at me. I didn't get back to him in time. And boom, boom. And I'm like closing those traps. But it's really, really funny to hear you say that. And I remember when I was reading, your bio, and we did this the first time, I saw something that I loved, and you talked about the stamina of success. And I feel like it's so tied into what we were talking about earlier. It's like, I've just basically run out of options to fail, right? I'm like, nope, I've turned that stone over, turned that stone. That one looks the same. Oh, it's a little different underneath it. Maybe I'll grab that part, right? But how do you start to navigate this? Because I feel like what I notice so often, and even in myself, is that I'd measure in days and not decades, and I would make these really, really fast, rash, short focused emotional decisions that felt real in the moment. But like you said, if I fast forwarded like 90 days, I would have been like, oh man, did I really stop watering the plant on day 7 and get really, really upset about this, right? And so, like, how do you go about navigating that, or advise your companies that you're investing in, or people you bring into your fund?
Yeah, you know, I sort of make a pact with myself day one, and I sort of come to an agreement that no matter what happens, I can handle it.
Yes. Like,
whatever it is, I'll handle it. I've handled everything up to now, so whatever ends up happening, I'll take it at face value, and I'll process it, and I'll move forward, whatever it is. And so once you've already accepted a scenario where you sort of don't get what you hope for, you know, then you've released that tension. And then you can just stay focused on how can you best achieve your goal. And you understand that it's probably not plan A. You choose plan A because you think it's going to work. But, you know, in experience, things take longer, they cost more, and they generally take a plan C. And you may not even know what plan C is day one. And that's the other thing. People think that they can see 10 miles ahead. And the reality, the way life works is you never know what's right around the corner, right? So you can be 3 feet away from something, but if it's at a 90 degree angle from you around a corner, you can't see it, even though you can get to it within 10 seconds. And then you turn that corner and it's like, whoa, I didn't know that would be there. And life is a lot like that, right? And so you just gotta stay on your feet, keep moving forward, make the best decisions that you can, and realize things are not always visible and they're not always linear, right? So you might feel like, geez, I didn't make any progress this week or this month, or, you know, I've been working really hard. And the reality is sometimes, you know, that gratification or that clarity, you know, doesn't come in the time frame you want it to, you know, and that's okay. You just got to, you know, you got to keep moving forward, and you got to keep make the best decisions that you can. And, you know, one of my mentors is a best-selling author, Jim Collins. And one of the things that he taught me is we all get lucky in life, but, you know, what he wants to know is what's your return on luck, right? Like so many people get lucky in life in so many ways and they don't see it. They don't get any return on that luck, right? And that's something I constantly think about is like, geez, there's all these opportunities around me. How do I avail myself of them? How do I, you know, take advantage of the amazing things that are happening around me? And, you know, sometimes people, they don't have the acuity to see that. They're so focused narrowly on a specific way. They don't see all these amazing things around them that, you know, they could leverage.
Well, and like, I feel like I'm like crucifying myself in front of everybody, but Mike is just like speaking my language over here. It comes down to what you said earlier, though. Like, even when you were riffing out about like how to start, you're like, you kind of got to know what your core values are, right? And then from there, you can determine like what your core roles are. And then that's the only thing that gives you the barometer, for lack of better terms, or the pin in the map to know when those opportunities arise. Like, I'm going to make a decision. And that decision, I feel like I have to be a triage nurse of every situation in my world. And I'm like, you know, there's times where I'm like, you know what, today is the day that I'm choosing to go this extra mile, because this is opportunity meets preparation. And this 3 hours today is way more important than me going home or running up the mountain or doing blank. But I feel like I struggled for so long because I didn't have any barometer to put that against. And so I didn't know what my needle movers were, as Mike McAllowitz will call them, right? Like what those core roles were, where those inputs went in. And so I have a question. This is going to be an interesting question, because when you were speaking about the goals part, I also realized personally that I struggled a ton in making decisions in business because I didn't have an identity outside of the business. And so I wasn't pursuing personal goals. It was like every goal I had was inside or on the other side of some imaginary starting line and finish line in the business. And so then it was like, yes, man, yes, man, yes, man, yes, man, because I didn't have anything outside of the business to focus on. Have you seen that to be true as well? Or do you have any thoughts on that? Because I feel like I'd love your expertise.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point, George. And that's, I think, the beauty of values, because when we don't have values and all there is I'm going after this one client and I either win the client and that's great for about 10 seconds until you look for the next one, or I don't, right? But when you take that and zoom out and then think about, well, why do I even want this in the first place? Well, I have this core value of entrepreneurship. And the reason I love entrepreneurship is I love the discovery process of learning new things and of exploring and of trying things. And then you're like, oh, so that's why I do all of this. And then when you really connect to the core abstract value, rather than just the exact specific details of how it instantiates itself in the world, you know, then you're in a much more sort of comfortable place, because it's much easier to understand all the different ways that you can achieve a value of being of use to people, or of learning, or of exploring, or of experiencing new things. Whatever your values are, you know, it's so much more liberating. But if you don't pause and think about it in that level of abstraction, you know, then you just place so much importance on specific things happening a specific way. That's a really difficult sort of way to live your life. And so I just, you know, I really encourage people to be intellectually honest about their values. And it's funny, because I stopped even telling people what my values are, because everyone would then say, oh yeah, I like that value too, or I like that value. And that's great. You can have my values. I'll share them. But like, the point is, you got to really, you got to be intellectually honest. And the other thing I'll say, George, this is really important about your values and your roles, is you got to be intellectually honest with yourself. Like, I've seen so many people who say, yeah, my number one thing in my life is X, whatever it is, my family or my business. But then you look at their lives and they spend 98% of their times doing anything but X. And it's like, well, okay, like, which one is it, right? Like, you gotta, I'm not telling you how to live your life, but like, there seems to be a tremendous tension between who you want to be and who you actually are. And maybe you should just allow yourself to be who you are, you know? I mean, you just see so much of that.
And I feel like that even validates what I was saying earlier in such a profound way, because there wasn't space to be who I was. And so I couldn't even find or have the ability to be intellectually honest with what those values were or were not, because it was just more washing machine, more rumination, more collapse and constraint. And so that tickles on such a deep level, such a deep level.
Yeah. You know, people know who they are. You just got to pause and observe. You know, it's you don't even need to overthink it, right? It's like, well, you know, I go long hikes every day trying to think about who I am. I'm like, well, you seem to be someone who likes to go on long hikes. So why don't you start there and figure, you know, what that means to you? Like, oh, that's really interesting, you know? And so it's so much just about observing, you know, and, mm-hmm. and just being intellectually honest with yourself.
Even when you said that, I used to do that. I'm like, oh, I'm going hiking to find out who I am. I'm like, I'm a hiker. Nature's important to me. There's nothing to find out here. This is the thing. It's not what I'm finding in this thing. It's the thing itself.
100%.
And that is it. But also, like, even the observer, like, I feel like in the life that I've had, right? Like, I've had to spend my life tricking myself out of my own bullshit very, very eloquently. So everything's down to like a fortune cookie, you know, for me. And I'm like, oh, there's a fortune cookie out. But I'm like, hey, listen, like, if you drafted me for $100 million to be the quarterback on the field and I'm playing football and you are like, hey, bro, you threw that wrong. Like, I'd want you to tell me so I can make an adjustment. But then when I would throw my own pass, I'm like, oh my God, you should never play football again. You epic failure. How dare you pick up that football, right? And it was like this gap. And it wasn't even that I wasn't being like intellectually honest. It's that because I didn't know who I was, everything else was evidence that I wasn't being myself instead of being like, oh, this is who I am. No, I'm committed to learning. I love breaking stuff. I love fixing broken stuff. I'm like, give me the biggest mess you can find and let me come into it with you. Like, we'll find the meat. We'll find the values. We'll find the needle movers. But because I didn't know that's who I was, everything was like, oh, you failed. You didn't do it again. And now I'm like, oh, no. Like, I'm in the mess. This is where I belong. This is what I said I loved. Like, this is it. But I didn't have that sense of identity. And so it just became this trap. And it was just this, like, as much as I thought I wasn't in the spin cycle, like, I was getting F5 hurricaned all day. And it's been this, and even the collapse after the event, I was reflecting and I had my come down on the flight, right? Everyone's like, how was the event? What are the words? Well, like, how was it? And I'm like, empty. Like, I'm empty right now. Like, I have nothing, like nothing. And then, you know, I started to have the feelings come up, right? And it was starting in my brain on the flight, no Wi-Fi, just looking out the window. And I was like, oh man, you didn't do this. And I was like, no. Presence is like the number one value that I have. Like, it is like, I'm about to cry thinking about it because I wasn't present for 37 years of my life. And so presence is it. And then I'm like sending a message to Ashley and she's like, so you mean you were just, you know, being perfectly yourself the whole time? And I was like, oh yeah, there we go. But there's a time in my life, not so long ago, even when on paper, Mike, like on paper, New York Times bestseller, out on book tour, making hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. And I was like, but do you guys remember the photos? I was 260 pounds.
Wow.
I was 168 this morning. And it looked like there was a shell of a human and there was nothing on the inside. And like those moments would last months, like months. And they would just stack and stack. And like as simple, as profound as it is that you say it, I ignored that point. It was just, I wouldn't look in the mirror and be like, hey, you did good today, but maybe you don't want to throw the ball that hard and throw out your shoulder, maybe throw it in the right direction and just make these micro adjustments. And so that lands profoundly for me. So thanks for letting me share that. But that one tickled.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that anecdote. You know, there's another saying that, that goes, it doesn't matter how fast you climb the ladder. If it's leaning against the wrong wall, you're only getting farther from where you want to be. And there's just so many people who are just vigorously climbing that ladder as fast as they can, leaning against the wrong wall, only to discover, that if they had just placed the ladder in the right direction, they could have gone a lot slower. And, that's an important principle, I think, as well. And one of the things that are underestimated is, we can all stand to make things easier in life. You know, I think we all make things much more complicated than they need to be. And, you know, we all get intimidated because we think everything has to be hard because, how could you possibly be successful and have a big business and have all these great things in your life? It just has to be hard because good things have to be hard. But like, why? Like, who said that's true, right? Like, yeah, right? I mean, sometimes we've got to work really hard for what we want, but like, that's not a law of the universe. Like, you know, sometimes you can allow yourself to make things easier and, you know, still get the outcome that you want. And I think sometimes all of us can stand to do that in certain aspects of our life.
I will tell you right now, the two questions that came up at this event, so there were 40 of us locked in an Airbnb for 4 days, and I mean like 6 a.m. till 1 a.m. The two questions, and these ones always tickle me, what would it look like if it was easy? That one, I probably said it 100 times and then heard it repeated like 900. And then my other favorite one, and this one was installed in me like 8 years ago, from one of my incredible mentors. And I was like in my hole, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Like, and she's like, what are you pretending not to know? And it literally was like somebody took me from 150 to zero instantly. And then she's like, and before you do it, George, and you ask me anything else, there's a second part. What are you also pretending not to see? And the true, true answer is what you alluded to earlier, is that I'd actually just never given myself the space to be intellectually honest with myself. Like, advocated from emotion, no fault, no blame, no guilt, no shame. But like, okay, like really, if I pull the ripcord right now and like take a peek up, like where am I? Right? Like, what does this really, really look like? And I've come to figure out that in my life, like my job is to be as obsessed as possible about being a triage nurse as often as possible. Right? Like, and I think about things that we see all the time, because I know you're seeing this right now, like the market's changing, the world is changing, people are under constraint, their behaviors are different. But for years in business, it was always like, speed is king, speed is king. And I was like, yeah, but not speed in climbing the wrong ladder, leaning against the wrong wall. Speed in your accurate current state and your decision-making to make micro adjustments, not change the entire thing every single time it comes out. And so I hear like even most of what's happening in the market now and people's webinars aren't working and this isn't working. And I was like, well, yeah. But if you go spend 90 days locked behind a wall to make another one, I promise you 90 days from now, that's not going to work either. And so it's all these like potent reminders. Even we were talking about this before the show, you said something so eloquent. You're like, yeah, these are the things we hear, but we all need to hear them all the time. And, you know, from my seat to yours, like I'm incredibly honored and humbled by your humility. But also when I hear you say that, I'm like, thanks for the permission slip and thanks for letting me know I'm not crazy. And like, hey, I'll shoot you a text. I'm like, me too, me too, me too. And I think there's this trap that I fell into for years, and I would love your thoughts on this. And I'm asking you this particularly because when it comes to the position you're in, I don't think a lot of people understand the value of being able to build your own, but then watch other people build it, but then go behind the scenes of them building it. And I've gotten that seat as like an influencer that used to have all the followers, and then I deleted them. And I was like, yep, don't care. Couple hundred thousand people, my life is back. I know who I am now, right? But then going behind the scenes and seeing it. And so you have this very, very, in my opinion, like probably one of the most valuable views in the world that exists when it comes to entrepreneurship. And so the reason I'm asking this is because you see so many people, and I would love to hear like, what are some of like the common mistakes or the traps that they fall into where some of these simple reminders, and for myself included, I feel like if I fast forwarded us 10 years, I'm going to come back to this show and I'm like, dude, if I just wrote down what Mike said and listened to it every day, I'd be living a drastically different life right now. And so I would just kind of love to hear your thoughts and perspective on any of that.
Yeah, no, thank you for asking, George. You know, I'm going to share an anecdote. I was privileged to have breakfast with the president of, let's call it a top 10 at minimum university. Yeah. It's not my place to sort of disclose which one of them. So we'll just keep it vague, but assume that it's one of the handful of elite sort of schools in the country. And it was a very interesting conversation and very illuminating conversation speaking to the president of this university, because she had mentioned to me what a small portion of the people who go to this school who have phenomenal records to get in, near perfect scores and perfect grades and, you know, these perfect resumes, they can't do very much wrong in life in order to get in, but only about 20% of them on the back end actually realize anything close to their potential. And the reality is 80% of them all do the same thing. They take the same job that all their peers do, and you know, they take the path that's expected of them, and very few of them know how to fail because they've never failed before, right? There's the people who got perfect scores in their SAT, and then there's the people who missed one question, right? Like that, those are the two varieties of people that end up at some of these places. And then, you know, they realize when they hit challenges in life and it doesn't work out, they don't know how what to do with it. And then on the back end, they're just like, well, okay, here's the top, you know, there's nothing wrong with them. I love investment banks. I love consulting firms, you know, but, you know, the reality is a lot of these individuals have sort of incredible creative talents that they should allow themselves to harness, rather than going, to more conventional routes. And, you know, we as a society are relying on them to use all that talent, in creative ways. And, more than anything else, you know, being behind the scenes at, like you said, at Harvard and MIT and Stanford and teaching there and mentoring students. And we have an internship and fellowship program, and we bring a lot of these people into our own organization. And then of course we have a lot of academic startups. So we see a lot of these folks, and it's really just encouraging people to be the best versions of themselves and to realize, and give them permission to fail. You know, we don't celebrate that a lot in our society. We don't talk a lot about it. And, you know, and the whole system is set up that way. Like universities, especially the top tier ones, explicitly bias themselves towards people, right? Who like, well, you got an A minus, so what are we going to do with you, right? Like, you know, there's someone who never got an A minus, right? And it's like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we got to rethink all this because, maybe that person figured a whole lot out during that process. And, you know, maybe on paper, you know, because look at all the phenomenal success that you've had in your life, you know, George, and it's such a privilege to be on this show, right? And all of the challenges that you've had, you know, have challenged you to be more authentic and to be stronger and to do phenomenal things, right? And, you know, that's what I've learned, you know, those are the people I've seen as successful. People who are just like, you know, I'm just going to be myself and I'm going to keep going and I'm going to figure it out. You know, and those are the people end up being successful. And like we talked about, it's those two things. It's how you define risk and how you think about relationships. And if you're healthy on both of those fronts, you know, more often than not, you're going to find a way through.
God, I just love how you just landed the plane. I'm like, Mike's just over here, like landed, tied together. And I feel humbled to hear that. But, you know, you even said something, and I think we said it before the show, but, you know, I consume a lot and I'm obsessed about the human brain and my own brain. But, you know, it's the thing that I've realized is that once I really figured out who I was, like you spoke to, values wise, right? Not that that's who I am forever. It's who I am today. Like when I wake up this morning, I was like, this is important to me today. This is what it feels like today. And in the lens of your vein, I'm like, I'll tell you my daily practice. But just like Mike said, you can borrow values, just like you can borrow a morning routine, you can borrow an affirmation, and you can check the box or you can feel the box. And feeling the box is the only place it lands. Like if you have family is my number one thing, but you're doing this for your family, and I ask your kids, where's daddy? And they're like, work. I'm like, you're not doing it for your family, right? Like my favorite one, Mike, is this happened at the event. I was like, let me guess, you're an entrepreneur because you want to make more money, right? I'm like, what else do you value? They're like, time. And I was like, amazing. I was like, there's this one law, pick God, pick the Bible, pick abundance, gratitude, scarcity. I was like, you have to be grateful for what you have before you, you know, can have any more of it. And they're like, oh, I just want time. I'm like, amazing. Give me your phone. And they're like, okay. And I'm like, I'll give it back to you tomorrow. What are you going to go do right now? And they're like, and I was like, but you said you wanted time. And they're like, I'm like, you have it. And they're like, and I was like, oh, we don't know what to do with it. And that was me. I fell into that trap for so long of just like not even having a clear picture. And I was actually creating what I wanted. I just didn't realize it was a byproduct of not really knowing what I wanted. Right. And so for people listening to this, like what Mike said about his values or his things. Like, it's easier to look in the mirror and see who you are and see what's important to you, and whether that's important through the lens of like, I do this every day and this is important, or you use inversion theory. And I'm like, great, at the end of the day, when you're sitting there and you can't sleep, what are all the things you list out that you're upset you didn't do for yourself that day? And I'll tell you what your values are, but you have to be intellectually honest to look at them and to put them down. Because like, even what you said earlier, I had to share this. Like, you're like, it's not always the front door, the back door, the side door, but when, what was it? What was your success on luck? That one tickled, because just like you, or maybe not like you, but for me, like, I don't know how I ended up on this with you. I don't know how I ended up in the boardroom of Adidas or with these professional sports teams or all of it. But then when I hear that, when I hear that quote from you, it reminds me of a story. And I just told this at the event, and I was like, well, someone's like, how'd you get that sports team? And I was like, I'll tell you the whole story in 1 minute. I was like, I was boarding a flight in Amsterdam, and I got on first class, got my bed, and this tall, dark gentleman sat down next to me, and he's like, how'd you get up here? And I was a smart ass, and I was like, oh, let me guess, you played basketball, obviously. And I had a blue mohawk and pajama pants on. He's like, yeah, but how'd you? I'm like, oh, I'm a consultant, and boom, boom, boom. He's like, oh my God, I'd love to connect. Like, I work for this team. We're having this issue. And most people would get his business card and be like, amazing. And I looked him dead in the eye, and I like looked at my list, and I was about to sleep. And I was like, well, we have 9 hours till we land. Can I just fix it right now? And he's like, huh? And I was like, I'll just teach you all this right now. So I whipped open my iPad, and I literally did like an 8-hour keynote. I'm like, do this, do this, do this. And he's like, oh, I'm like, here's my number. Call me if you need anything. And then I didn't hear from him for like 5 weeks. And then I get a phone call, and he's like, hey, you and your wife, can you be in LA like tomorrow? I'd love to introduce you to the president of this company, the owner of this company, former president of top 10, you know, Fortune company. And I was like, yeah. And I was like thinking about that, back to that moment. And I'm like, if I just took the card, didn't have the conversation or didn't take that time, I have no idea. But then in hindsight, looking back, Mike, I have probably like 12 of those. So when you said like, what's your odds on luck or what's your success rate with luck? I was like, oh yeah, yeah, that tickled, because I can think of the millions of those that I was like, oh no, it's showing up on accident. Like, no, not right now. No, I'll do that later. And so that one really landed for me a lot.
Well, thank you for sharing that, George. And, you know, I had to interject on one thing that you said, because I hear this all the time. You know, people talk about, I'm just so busy and I don't have enough time, right? How often do you hear people say, I'm just so busy and I don't have enough time? And, you know, I'd posit the following. 99% of the time, when people say they're just too busy and don't have enough time, that's not their issue, actually. Like, the reason that you're frustrated, the reason, whatever you're feeling right now, it's not about time, so give it up, right? It's something else, right? You know, maybe there's some relationship in your life that isn't going the way you want to, or maybe there's something at work that isn't going the way you want to, or, you know, you're frustrated about something, and I'm empathetic to that. But, you know, and people just say, God, if I had more time, no, you know, you're frustrated because something isn't going the way you want it to, or because you have less control over the outcome. You did everything that you can, or things aren't working on the time frame that you want them to. You know, one is, yeah, we can all talk about being more efficient, and I have all these strategies and I believe in them, and they work and they're important. But the vast majority of the time, it's not like I just need to be 10% more efficient and that's my issue in life, right? Like, no, there's something much more fundamental. So you're better off just, you know, rather than telling myself, gosh, I'm just so busy this week, you know, just digging a little bit deeper and really understanding what the core is going on. Because I always laugh at and I catch myself saying it all the time, gosh, I'm so busy. And then I'm like, what am I even talking about? Like, you know, why is that the case? And then I go, it's like, you know what? It's not so much that I'm busy. It's just that these three things that are, you know, just sort of frustrating me. And then I was like, oh, okay. Yep. You know, and then, you know, so that was just something that, you know,
oh, I'm glad. Yeah. And I thank you for calling me out, because I fall into the trap, I think, more than anybody. And it's to our point. I'm like, oops. And like, Mike, I will tell you the biggest breakthrough. I told this on the show quickly, but my son's 7, right? And so we use declarative language and helping him learn and label his feelings and all of it. We were talking to the teachers and they're like, he's having anger stuff because he doesn't know what these feelings are. And I was like, oh, like, how am I going to show him? They're like, you have to model it for him. And I was like, well, what do you mean? She's like, well, you ever in the kitchen and get frustrated? I'm like, yeah, I spilled my coffee that day. She's like, what's your normal? I'm like, rrr. And she's like, all right, you ready? And I was like, yep. She's like, you got to say oopsie and then make fun of it. And then she's like, do you ever lie? I'm like, I catch myself in little white lies all the time. She's like, yeah, but you fix them in your head really quickly. And then you just say the correct thing, right? I'm like, yeah. She's like, I need you to do that out loud with your son. And I was like, okay. And so then everybody, like even our CEO, Ashley, she's like, what's going on? Like, you're so happy. Everything feels easy. You're like owning conversations and boom, boom, boom. I was like, oh, well, for the last 2 weeks, I've been modeling to a 7-year-old how many times I make mistakes all day out loud. And so it's like, oh, oopsie, or drop the coffee, oopsie, or oopsie, and then reframe it. And then he's around me so much in the business. I'm like, oh, daddy forgot to send a message, oopsie. And then I send it. I'm like, hey, sorry, I forgot to send you a message, oopsie. And all of a sudden, though, what I realized, though, is it was like very out loud reconditioning this muscle that I've done internally that got a little lackadaisical in me. And I'm the same way where I will fall into that trap of like, oh my God, like I wish I had more time. I'm so busy. And I'm like, in this moment, you're wasting it. If instead of asking the question, right? And so somebody asked at the event, they're like, you know, like, why don't I have the thing that I have? And I'm like, because you're asking the question instead of doing the thing, right? Like why gets in the way of an intentional aligned action to recreate it? Whether that action's a current state of like, hey, you know what? I'm going to be really integrous about how I feel right now, right? Like something's bumming me out. I feel like I'm too busy. I feel like I don't have time. And I'm like, great. Byron Katie it. 4 truths. Is it true? Is it absolutely true? What evidence do you have to support that it's true? And what would happen if it wasn't true, right? And it's like just finding these pockets to like break check or pause yourself for me allows us, and even in your language here, to realize, okay, if I have energy to pour, am I pouring this into a critical relationship for me or even one with myself? Or am I wasting this in a completely other one? Or am I getting feedback from one of those critical people? Or am I believing the feedback that doesn't exist from all these other people that aren't there? And I feel like it's just these series of finding the present and then making micro adjustments while measuring in the macro. And I think that that's where I land for me.
You know, George, that thank you for sharing that. And you said something that really resonated with me, which I wanted to sort of say back to you if I can, which is,
please.
You know, you mentioned something that I thought is really interesting and very much true, which is when we communicate to others, even if we're not intending to, first and foremost, we're communicating to ourselves. Right?
Yes.
We hear everything that we say more so than anyone else hears it. And even if we're intending to impress something upon somebody else, how great we are, how smart we are, how perfect we are, and then by doing that, you're implicitly telling yourself, well, I'm okay, or I'm good because I'm perfect, because I'm great, because I'm smart, because I have all these things. And you think you're trying to impress that upon the other person, but what you're doing is you're inculcating in your own head that these are all the identities and all the hurdles that you're creating for yourself, right? And then you're training other people, you know, how they should value you, right? But the funny thing is, yeah. If I just spent the entire conversation rather than talking about anything that I ever did right in life, and all I did literally the entire time was like, this guy hasn't done anything right in his life. Like all I did was talk about my fails, like nothing. Right. Just like, yep. Like to the point where you would go at the end of the show and be like, why did George even have this person on? Right.
Yep.
The reality is you and everyone else on the program would like me every bit as much as if anything that worked. Like it honestly doesn't even matter, because like I'd be like, nope. You know, we'd be sitting here and be like laughing if the deal worked out. Nope. Or if I told you, hey, I sold this business for $1 billion, you'd be like, wow, that's great, Mike. I'm like, hey, George, the whole thing blew up. You'd be like, oh, that's interesting, what did you learn? And it'd be like, and it's okay either way. And like, you know,
it's either way.
And that's like, you know, that's an important message. And then once you sort of realize that, then you're like, well, geez, now I can think about risk differently. Because we're all, I mean, if these kids at this one institution you know, are realizing 20% of their potential because they're so afraid of being who they are, of being different than the people around them, of doing something and it not working out, of trying to explain to their peers why they took this funny looking job or went on their own and it failed while someone else went to this fancy place. You know, as soon as you realize that, like, well, it's okay, you know, then that gives you permission to do all sorts of cool things like you've done, right? And you've discovered all these amazing things about yourself because you've allowed yourself to.
Contrary to what most people think, I didn't wake up and be like, I'm going to be homeless, then be a Marine, try to do 30 years, get medically separated, accidentally be a food blogger, New York Times bestseller, number one app, realize I hate cooking in the process, delete all my social media followers, end up in a jungle, accidentally become a consultant to realize I don't like the soul-sucking side of the Fortune 100 side, to come back to entrepreneurs and be like, let's put our hearts back into our business. And here we are today. And I'm like, if you want any more evidence that it's not linear,
right,
I can give it to you all day.
And permission for everyone listening to the show to be like, look at the smiling, laughing, happy face of this magnificent human being here who's gone through all these things, you know? And so you have permission to at least do as much, you know, and you'll be fine, right? And
you'll be fine.
And then it's like, well, okay, you know, then what are the things? And, you know, as someone who's dedicated his life, most of it at least, to entrepreneurship and to science and innovation, you know, these are just really critical points for the kind of work that, you know, that I do. There's a leap there of you could call it a leap of faith, but there's a leap of some sort where you just make a decision that I'd rather live my authentic life and believe that that's going to lead to better outcomes for everyone over the long term, you know, than have to live on everyone else's terms because you think that's what's expected of you. That very rarely works out well in the long run so you might as well start early. I wish someone would have told me that earlier in my life, but I don't know why, and no one can ever like learn that lesson. It's like you and me both, George, like we've gone through all this stuff, right? And it's like, can't you just like write a book about all that and be like, you know,
it's the one lesson that has to be fully felt because we ended up in the same place. And like what it is in the morning, it's like you get all of me all the time because that's my freedom. Anything else is a prison. And if that's, I'm sad today, you're going to ask how my morning is. And I'm going to tell you it's wonderful because I'm in front of you and I spilled my coffee on and I was worried about this and I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah.
And right. It's all these choices and these pieces over time. And God, even the way that you like, when you reframe things back and add things back, it just like tattoos it into me. And I'm like, thank you, Mike. Like, thank you for the reminder. Like, thank you for being in this. Thank you for being the man that's created all the results that you have and also giving people the real answers, because as much as it's out there, I can find hundreds of people that have accolades that don't have the results and don't have the happiness and don't have the joy because they didn't choose to do it for themselves. And you're a big relationship guy and I can feel it from a mile away, right? There's no accidents. And you know, for me, and this is my show, and I say this to everybody listening, there's two ways to learn. You can learn and listen to what people are saying, but you can also learn a whole lot more by watching how they're being. And I think that that's where we look for when we want the real answers, to be intellectually honest, to look in the mirror and make some adjustments. And I feel like you're an example of that. Like, I will do this with you all day. We can do gratitude fest. We can do fill each other's buckets. I mean, we can do it all. I do want to ask you, and I'm gonna land this because we're coming up on time and I want to be respectful of everybody. They get mad at me when I end up in like 4-hour shows because I will just go all day. But I would really, really love to hear from you. And so one of the questions I ask people all the time is like, imagine everybody listening just got Men in Blacked and they forgot everything that we talked about and you have the ability to tattoo Mike Wisdom or wisdom for them on their soul. Like, what would your like takeaway for them you want them to be to carry with them forever, a reminder, anything short, long? Just would love to hear like what your big focus would be for everybody.
Well, that's a great question, George. And you know what I really love about your show is you told me before we started that you like to start with the dessert. You like to give people the bottom line message up front and give give them the benefit of that in the first couple minutes, and then we can drill down further on it. And because we started with the dessert, it only makes sense to end with the dessert as well. And you know, I'd sort of reinforce that very same message about risk, if you allow me to be redundant on that
Please.
Point, because I just think it's so incredibly important that you understand that no matter what happens, and you can go and, if you don't know about George's life or, you know, my life, you can read about both of us and many other people like us. Whatever happens, if you pursue your passions, you pursue your dreams, whatever the outcome, it'll be okay. And you'll find a way through it. Okay. And you'll find people who will support you and love you for who you are, and praise you for the courage you had to, you know, live your best life, and really challenge yourself to redefine risk, not as the notion of the possibility of failure, but the possibility of success, and not allowing yourself to have that success. And in the end analysis, failure, whether you take what you think is the conservative or quote unquote risky life, failure is an inevitability. You will fall down, right? Sometimes in a humiliating public manner, and sometimes privately, right? So you could just sort of eliminate any concern about that. That'll all happen. Everyone has their stories, and they end up making great stories anyway. But you know, please permit yourself to be your best authentic self. You know, lean into who you are, because that's how you're gonna be the happiest and also contribute the most. You know, and that would be my, you know, biggest message. And then, you know, the second message, you know, again, is about people. You know, find those critical few people in your life who you feel like you could be of service to, who you could be of use to. Take that lens. Gosh, there's this group of people who can really benefit from who I am and what I have to offer. And know that investing in those kinds of relationships, you know, over time will be reciprocal. And those will be the most beneficial relationships to you. And I think if you do those two things, it'll carry you far.
Oh man, I couldn't think of a better way. And I am so glad that you brought the front to the back, because it's always going to be the takeaway. It will always be the thing. And if you ever forget, just come back to those things and they will help presence you. And so the only thing that I want to add is that, consider this, and I'm speaking for Mike, consider this your official permission slip from two gentlemen who talk about this, who live this way, who be this way, and one on paper who I don't even exist in the world, but luckily as men, we understand that the results come because we take different paths. But let this be your permission slip to go write your own, to take that action, to send that phone call. It can be as simple as picking up the phone and sending one text message that you've been afraid to send, or posting one video, or going up to your spouse and telling her that one thing, or him that one thing that's like really on your heart in those buckets. And it's the practicing of the muscle. And one of my favorite things that Mike Tyson ever said that I love is, the magic you're looking for is in the work you won't do. And the only thing I added is, the magic you're looking for is in the work you won't do and the feelings you won't feel. Feel the feelings. They are the greatest superpower that you have. And I will remind you that the day your heartbeat becomes flat, you beg for it to have a ride again. And so enjoy the ride of your emotions, because when they're numb and when they're gone, you're going to wish that you had another one. And so here's your permission slip. Take it from us. And I'm going to tell you this, we're going to put all of Mike's contact info in the show notes, because he's on LinkedIn. He will meet you over on LinkedIn, where I'm banned for life. So you get pure Mike on LinkedIn, and you got to come to me on Instagram or the Alliance. And you guys know that story. And we'll have everything out there. And then Mike, genuinely, man, from like the bottom of my heart, I would love to do this again in the future. If you're game, I could talk to you all day, but I would love to do this again. And I'm just so honored you came on the show today, my friend.
Well, I'm honored that you had me. I'd love to be on the show anytime. I'm better for having had this conversation with you, and blessed that our lives cross paths here. And just really thankful for you, and thankful for all the people who are listening, because I know you're listening, because you're connected to this message. And you know, please send it along. Please share this with people in your lives. because there's a tremendous network effect to sharing goodness. So appreciate all of you out there.
There is. Thank you so much. And for those listening, we will either see you in the next episode or you will hear me in your earballs. But either way, we're out.